You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
From Milwaukee to Marshfield, where passion meets purpose and policy meets people, this is the Maggie Dawn Show.
It is this moment right now, and we need people that have wealth and access to step the hell up.
Get ready to challenge the status quo with a fresh perspective on the issues that matter to you.
We can't take this as a country to have a leader who is so ill-informed and we look terrible.
Breaking down the complex world of policy and politics with clarity, conviction, and just the right amount of fun.
You got a bad sandwich at your favorite deli. What do you do about it? We can talk about whatever you want to sound off on.
Lawyer, economist, and fearless advocate for the truth. Here is Maggie Dawn.
Welcome, everybody. And happy Wednesday afternoon to each and every one of you. My name is Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Got a stacked show for you all this afternoon. We're going to begin by talking about billionaire baby boys and their attempts to buy elections and what we should all be doing about that. We're then going to be joined at the bottom of this hour by an expert from the American Foreign Policy Council to help us understand what got us to this point with Iran and what may come next. I think that's going to be an absolutely critical discussion. Big props to my senior producer, Jamie, for lining up these guests this afternoon to cover all of the breaking news. And then at the top of the 5 o'clock hour, critically importantly, we are going to be joined by Indivar Duttagupta, or Indy. He's been on the show before. He is a Doris Duke Distinguished Visiting Fellow at Georgetown. He knows all about budget policy and especially what is going on with the Senate markups. We're going to talk about those potential impacts to Wisconsinites and the middle class. And then finally, in that 5 o'clock hour, we're also going to be joined in response to the breaking news this morning by Abigail Swetz, the executive director of Fair Wisconsin. This, of course, in reaction to the breaking news this morning that the Supreme Court doesn't understand that the Equal Protection Clause means equal. We're going to discuss that. Basically, the Supreme Court has endorsed trans care bans for minors, flying in the face of prior Supreme Court precedent that said sexual identity and questions of gender are indeed part of what is protected by the Equal Protection Clause. And therefore, when a government regulates in that space, those regulations must be subjected to the highest level of scrutiny to ensure that our most fundamental constitutional protections are actually given full breath here on Earth One. Apparently, the Supreme Court doesn't get that. At least six of them, that decision coming down on ideological lines. So we've got so much to talk with you about. Very pleased to have with me a frequent guest of this program and a new guest to the program. I'm joined to begin by Jeff Mandel, the executive director and head of Law Forward, as well as Scott Thompson, one of the lawyers there with Jeff, to talk about this groundbreaking lawsuit in response to, I don't know, a weird new way to corrupt elections that billionaire baby boy Elon Musk came up with in our last election cycle here in Wisconsin. You'll remember this. He was giving away huge cardboard checks to people. I don't know, seemed to be something that we might be concerned about since paying people to vote has been made illegal since the Tammany Hall days. It's sort of pay to play at its most fundamental. They've filed a lawsuit that has garnered nationwide attention to stop this practice. Welcome back to the show, Jeff. Welcome to the show, Scott. Gentlemen, let's start with you. Jeff, can you tell us exactly the claim that is being made in the lawsuit and why this is so important to keep Wisconsin elections fair?
Well, thanks, Maggie. We're glad to be here. This really is a case about free and fair elections and protecting those here in Wisconsin. And so what we have done on behalf of the Wisconsin Democracy Campaign and voters here in Wisconsin, is brought a case asking the court to make clear that this conduct, this scheme, violates the election bribery statute here in Wisconsin, constitutes an illegal lottery under Wisconsin law, and that it was a civil conspiracy between Musk and two nonprofit organizations that he has significant control over, and also that this was a public nuisance, because free and fair elections are a public good for everyone in the state of Wisconsin, and this attempt to interfere is a nuisance. And so we are proceeding on behalf of the state of Wisconsin to fight back against that.
So let's just recap in case anybody missed this. So you got public nuisance. We've got a civil conspiracy. What was the first item on the tick list of wrongness about what Elon Musk did?
Well, we're asking the court for what's called a declaratory judgment. So the court is going to say, this is what the law means. And as part of that declaration, we're saying this constituted election bribery under our statute here in Wisconsin. Wisconsin statute 12.11, it's quite clear, and this is not okay.
Yeah, Wisconsin statute 12.11. Listen, I've been asked to interpret it in my former life as the corp counsel for Milwaukee County, and basically it was like, yeah, you can't even offer free bus rides. You got to worry about handing out water to voters in line because of the aggressive nature with which the right polices, and I use that word intentionally, polices, and I think some would argue engages in voter intimidation when it comes to get out the vote efforts on the day of. I was like, if I can't hand somebody a bottle of water in line to vote when there's a long line, how is it possible that Elon Musk gets to hand them a big old cardboard check of $1 million? It just seems so absurd. Scott, let me ask you, have you heard from any conservatives that were in good faith also troubled by this kind of overt, loud and proud corruption?
I think that people of all stripes felt it in their gut. I think that people from across the aisle really sensed that this was different. And even if you look at the complaint, one of the recipients of the $1 million check went on video with America PAC and identified that he had previously done get out the vote work and that this was something different. That people hadn't done it like this before. And as our complaint really makes clear, we think that's because it's illegal. So really, again, that's why we brought the lawsuit. We think that people are right. We think that that sense of unfairness that had many people, like I said, across the aisle, sort of furrowing their brow and really feeling uncomfortable, we think those people are right and that the law backs that up.
This is from the Washington Post coverage. The lawsuit filed in state court by the Wisconsin Democracy Campaign says that Musk's actions create the, quote, risk that Wisconsin elections will become an open auction where votes go to the preferred candidates of the highest bidders. And the election outcome is determined by which candidate has a patron willing and able to pay the highest sum to Wisconsin voters. That's the piece, Scott, that you think regular people, when you look at that and you stand back, and it literally is like putting a for sale sign in the front of the metaphoric lawn of our house of democracy. And I struggle to understand, like, what's the long game for conservatives? Because then is it just an auction? Again, which candidate has which deeper pocketed guys lined up to hand out checks to would-be voters? It seems to smack of very, very partisan short-sightedness that it was okay because it was Elon. I mean, Jeff, correct me if I'm wrong, but didn't conservatives freak out when Zuckerbucks and other wealthy folks tried to give money to help literally just campaign workers, election workers during the pandemic because so much more help was needed, and they screamed bloody murder then. Not a peep now, it seems. Strange, wouldn't you say?
It's not just that they screamed bloody murder, but we amended our state constitution to prohibit any private funding for election administration. And then, as you note, we have someone coming in and pouring tens of millions of dollars into this campaign. You know, what's so disturbing to me, Maggie, and it's in the complaint, is another article from the Washington Post, this one the day after our spring election, where North Carolina U.S. Senator Tom Tillis basically said that Elon Musk is a disruptor and that we all just need to get used to it. And what we should expect is that this will be the new normal going forward. And we should expect to see wealthy partisans on both sides standing on election stages, giving out those giant cardboard checks for $1 million. And that cannot become the new normal. That's why we're bringing this lawsuit, is we cannot go down that road. We are completely convinced it's already a violation of Wisconsin law. As Scott said, almost everyone we speak to agrees. Everyone is uncomfortable about this and says, that can't be right, can it? And so we are asking a court to step in and confirm what everyone already knows and make sure that this does not become the new normal here in Wisconsin or anywhere else.
Folks, if you're just joining us, this is the Maggie Dawn Show. I'm joined this half hour by Scott Thompson and Jeff Mandel of Law Forward. If you missed the news a few weeks back, they filed a lawsuit in partnership and with the Wisconsin Democracy Campaign to stop the billionaire baby, otherwise known as Elon Musk, from handing out huge cardboard checks for $1 million or $100 to would-be voters for signing up. This just seems to me, Jeff, to be the natural evolution of the Supreme Court's complete failure to understand correctly on Earth One the corrupting influence of private money in political campaigns. Where do you think this lawsuit goes? Do you think it gets resolved by the Supreme Court of Wisconsin? Do you think that the U.S. Supreme Court would be open to this kind of what I'm just going to call out-and-out bribery?
I don't think anyone believes that even the U.S. Supreme Court, that has equated money with speech and has vacated so many reasonable restrictions on how we try to make sure we're having free, fair elections, I don't believe anyone thinks that they are going to say that Wisconsin's election bribery statute is somehow unconstitutional. So this case should begin and end here in the Wisconsin Supreme Court. But this is, as you note, this is an evolution of what has happened. It is part of how our laws have devolved from Citizens United at the federal level to getting rid of tremendous amounts of campaign finance regulation here in the state while Governor Walker was in charge of the state. It's really unfortunate, and it's hard to believe that it was only a little bit more than a decade ago that Wisconsin was leading the way and had a Supreme Court election with full public financing and was a model and a light for the nation. And now look how different things are, and we need to bring this lawsuit.
And we have no one to thank for that except Wisconsin Republicans and Wisconsin former Republican Governor Scott Walker. We're going to continue this conversation with Scott Thompson and Jeff Mandel of Law Forward. On the other side, do you have questions for the gentleman or myself? 855-752-4842. That's 855-75-CIVIC. Government corruption, live and well here in Wisconsin, but we're going to do something about it. No more billionaire babies handing out big old checks to swing elections in a corrupt, corrupt way. Stay tuned. It's the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
Welcome back, everybody. And happy Wednesday afternoon. My name is Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Very fortunate to be joined this half hour by Scott Thompson and Jeff Mandel of Law Forward here in Wisconsin. A few weeks back, in cooperation with the Wisconsin Democracy Campaign, they filed a lawsuit seeking to bar billionaire babies like Elon Musk from trying to buy voters directly in the state of Wisconsin. This, of course, coming after Elon Musk's failed attempts to do just that in our April spring election. Their claims include election bribery in violation of Wisconsin state statute, public nuisance, and civil conspiracy. Scott, let me ask you this. When I zoom out and I look at Wisconsin relative to the rest of the country politically, right? If Wisconsin would have gone the other way in 2024, we'd be having a very different discussion right now. Wisconsin is, your word during our break, a bellwether for the rest of the country. It is therefore incredibly shocking to me that a sitting United States Senator, Tom Tillis, would look at what Elon Musk did, i.e. trying to buy votes, and say, yep, this is just the new normal, super, nothing to see here, everybody. This is fine. This is not fine. I think people innately understand that. And it was bad here. It would be worse if we were doing this on a nationwide basis. It also occurs to me that, boy, you want to talk about the idea, or at least the concept, the objective of merit in elections. Wouldn't this just lead directly to like the Manchurian candidates? I don't get it. Why would anybody want this?
It does feel, I mean, calling it a slippery slope implies that we haven't already started falling down one direction. And again, that's why
maybe greasing the slippery slope,
yes,
that we're already,
yes,
on.
Exactly. I mean, to take a step back, the allegations in the complaint, the facts here, they're wild. $1 million awards, the prospect of getting money was dangled in front of Wisconsin voters in the few days leading up to an election. People in Wisconsin know pretty well what it's like to be a member of a swing state. Can you even fathom what it would look like if these floodgates were truly opened? And I don't care who you're voting for. There's a lot of money that flies around in our elections, and people in Wisconsin get that. And if the difference maker ultimately becomes who can have the biggest award for voters at an event, like that's just not a place where I think democracy in the United States should be, and it's certainly not where Wisconsin should be.
Well, and if you, not to catastrophize beyond what is very literally a catastrophe, but you open the prospect of crypto and Donald Trump's, his administration's desire to hand, we can't regulate crypto, gee whiz, we're only the United States federal government. And the prospect of foreign corrupt influences through the use of crypto, I mean, wow, the permutations are endless and infinitely scary. We've got a question from a caller. Cam from Appleton, say hello to Scott and Jeff. What's your question?
Hey, gentlemen. Thank you for taking my call. I was wondering if during this case, if we would end up hearing or knowing as the general public what Elon and those two companies below him did with the information that they collected from people that were signing up to receive these payments.
Great question, Cam. Will discovery produce some information about how voter information might be used by a billionaire baby boy?
It very well might. The petitions, so the way this scheme worked was that voters were invited to sign a petition. The petition was put out by a political action committee called America PAC, which Mr. Musk founded. And it said that if you provided your information, that it would be only used by America PAC and its close affiliates. But in providing your information, you were going to be paid $100 as long as you were a registered Wisconsin voter who signed up and gave your information. And those payments did not come from America PAC, but people got emails that said the United States of America wants to pay you money because they came from a third entity called United States of America, Inc. And if your inclination is it's kind of amazing that someone can incorporate and create a company named that, I think a lot of people share that inclination as well. But I do expect that discovery could well help us see how this information flowed and whether it went beyond these three entities. It's a great question.
It's disgusting and shocking and clearly designed to manipulate. I mean, no question about it. Frida from Madison, say hello to the gentleman. Very briefly, ma'am, what's your question?
Am I on?
Yes, ma'am. Go ahead.
Oh, yes. My name is Frida, and I have a question. You know, I did sign up because I thought if I can get $100 out of Elon Musk, that'd be great. I'd love to do that. And I could get an extra $100 if I had a friend do it, too. So we did it. Well, Elon Musk never sent me my $100 plus my additional $100 reward. So I did not get paid for sharing my information. So yeah. Isn't that another lawsuit? Like, he promised me $100 and he never gave it to me?
Sounds like a contract to me. Jeff, what do you say?
You know, you did have a contract with him. You signed something, and we'd be happy to talk with you offline, Frida, about this. There are, unsurprisingly, people who have been paid, and it's unfortunate, but not surprising that there are people who haven't been paid.
Wonder how they decide who gets the money and who doesn't. That's just the weirdest thing. I'm sure it wouldn't have anything to do with an individual's particular political persuasion, which wasn't written in the rules for these checks. So again, weird. Contract. Breach of contract? Question mark. Free to go check out what's going on in Pennsylvania along similar lines. Jeff, very briefly, where can folks find out about more about Law Forward? What's your website?
Lawforward.org.
Easy peasy. Lawforward.org. If you got screwed by the billionaire baby, check him out, give him a call, or hit him up with an email. My name's Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show. When we come back, we talk Iran with an expert from the American Foreign Policy Council. Don't go anywhere. Welcome, everybody. Welcome back if you're rejoining us. My name is Maggie Dawn. This is The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. The world's breath has been collectively held. Will the United States offensively and in conjunction with Israel bomb Iran? And what does that mean? What does it mean for the United States, for the Mideast, and for the state of global affairs? We have just the man to discuss this with us. His name is Elon Berman. He's with the American Foreign Policy Council. Senior Vice President there. He is an expert on regional security in the Mideast, Central Asia, as well as the Russian Federation. He has edited more books than I could read if I had a whole week, and I read fast. He's also written a number of books, including Tehran Rising, Iran's Challenge to the United States, as well as other books specifically on this region. Welcome to the program, Mr. Berman. It's a pleasure to have you.
Happy to be here.
Over the last 24 plus-ish hours, Donald Trump has repeatedly said that Iran must offer unconditional surrender. There has been threats. He has said, we know where the Ayatollah is and we could kill him if we want. We're not going to now, but maybe that changes. The Ayatollah has responded on Iranian television and said this, quote, intelligent people who know Iran, the nation and the history of Iran will never speak to this language in the language of threats because the Iranian nation cannot be surrendered. The Americans should know that any U.S. military invention will undoubtedly be accompanied by irreparable damage. Let's start there. What is the current state of play? As of days ago, Donald Trump had a fairly isolationist view of this, but was saying right. Basically this is Iran and Israel's war. Why? Where did the light switch flip come from? Why are we in this moment? What is the moment? Why did he change tack? What's going on here?
Right. So first of all, there's a lot here, and so it requires a little bit of unpacking. But before I do, the caveat attaches, right? Things are moving so fast that by the end of our conversation, things may be different. But, you know, as the situation stands right now, I think it's necessary to understand sort of how we got here. So the path to this is actually something like two decades old. My first book on Iran, right? Shameless self-promotion, it's called Tehran Rising. I'm not sure it's all still relevant, but some of it is, included a fairly extensive at that time assessment of what Israel could do to Iran's nuclear program because it's so scattered, so hardened, so complex, so distributed. So people, I mean, certainly I have been thinking about this for a long time. And the Israelis have been thinking about this for even longer. The reason we're at this juncture now is because Israel saw a whole bunch of really alarming indicators that the Iranians were accelerating on a couple of things. They were accelerating on their enrichment, the amount of so to sort of to think for your listeners to think strategically about uranium enrichment. What you're actually talking about is you're talking about spinning, kind of like a washing machine, spinning a large amount of low enriched uranium, and you spin out the impurities and you're left with less stuff, but more of what you want. So this is what they talk about when they talk about Iran enriching to higher and higher grade. So the Israelis saw, first of all, signs that the Iranians were moving ahead in terms of enrichment. They saw signs that they were moving ahead in terms of weaponization, because you have to take that uranium and weaponize it, miniaturize it, put it on a missile to be able to fire it, to have that nuclear weapon. And that they were also in tandem accelerating their work on ballistic missiles, right? So those three things sort of combined to an Israeli assessment that time was running out. We've spent two decades looking at diplomacy. This is really not the time. Their complicating factor up until very, very recently was we now have a president who the expectation was he would put maximum pressure back on Iran. But at least for a few weeks, he was dallying with the notion of negotiating a deal with the Iranian regime. And so as long as he was negotiating, the Israeli understanding was there's a red light. We can't do anything. I think that began to change because the administration became more and more aware of the fact that the Iranians were slow rolling the negotiations. They weren't really negotiating in good faith. They weren't giving really serious, meaningful concessions. And so all of a sudden, the Israelis saw this narrow window of opportunity. So that's how we got to last week. That's how we got to what the Israelis are carrying at. Now, from then until now, it feels like a lifetime, but it's only been like 5 days or so. What the Israelis are trying to do is a few things, right? They're trying to they're beginning to dismantle the Iranian nuclear program. They haven't hit all the nuclear sites. Iran has a very complicated infrastructure that spans the whole country, but they've hit quite a bunch. They've hit a bunch of Iranian ballistic missile launchers. The reason why that's important is because Iran has a lot of ballistic missiles, but in order to fire them, it needs launchers, and it has less launchers. So the less it has, the less it can fire at Israel. That's why you're seeing what we saw over the weekend were pretty significant salvos of Iranian missiles headed towards Israel. What you're seeing now is much more modest. And that's a function of the fact that they're running out of stuff and they're running out of the stuff to fire the stuff. So this is really, everything is sort of moving in the direction that the Israelis want. They're also, you know, targeted and eliminated the military chain of command in terms of the Iranian military, the Iranian Air Force. And so militarily, everything is, from the Israeli perspective, is working well. The real $64,000 question is politically, what's the end state here? The Israelis have not made any indication. They've made some statements, but they really haven't done anything material to say, you know, our intention is to change the regime and to topple the regime. That's not the play. But what they want to do is they want to stay within the confines of what the president, they think the president has authorized them to do, which is to erode and degrade the Iranian nuclear threat. Now, over here in Washington, the administration is watching what the Israelis are doing. Nothing succeeds like success. And the further the Israelis go, the more the president has understood that this could be the moment to really pull apart the Iranian nuclear program in a lasting fashion. That's why, you know, he knows the Israelis have the upper hand. He knows by extension, he has the upper hand. That's why he's issuing these maximalist demands. And that's why if the Iranians don't play this right, we could end up in a situation where the United States provides the munition, the ordnance necessary for the Israelis to really get at the hardened, buried facilities that would really dismantle Iran's nuclear program for good.
Folks, if you're just joining us, that is Mr. Ilan Berman of the American Foreign Policy Council. You can read more about their work and analysis at the www.afpc.org. That's afpc.org. We're getting reports from the Wall Street Journal within the last 20 minutes. As you said, the caveat is things are changing as you and I are speaking. Elon, within the last 20 minutes from the Wall Street Journal reporting that Donald Trump has approved an attack on Iran, but has not given the final order yet. And I also want to reference this. A headline in Haaretz, one of the major papers in Israel this morning, read this: Taco Syndrome could tempt Trump to ride the wave of Israel's success and join the war against Iran. Precisely the point that you just made, Mr. Berman. And the secondary headline said this: Israel cannot eliminate the Iranian nuclear program on its own and is reliant on a capricious American president with a tendency to capitulate. One of the specific elements of the Iranian nuclear program that folks refer to is this Fordo bunker, this very deep, it's literally under a mountain. As I understand things, the United States is the only nation on Earth aligned with Israel that has the ordnance capacity to actually attack successfully this Fordo bunker. These are 30,000-pound bombs that require B-2 Spirit stealth bombers to drop them. They can penetrate up to 250 feet. They're made of this alloy, which is what adds the weight that allows them to get down without the detonation occurring. Again, it allows it to penetrate before it detonates. Is this what we're looking at? This kind of really incredible use of American force? Otherwise, are we, I don't know what strike the Wall Street Journal would be talking about, if not that.
No, so I think it's that. And right, so all the caveats attach. Haaretz is a very liberal paper in Israel. And so they're advisedly not fans of the American president. And they sort of, you know, the language, I think, reflects that. But in the broad strokes, I think they're correct. What they're talking about is an American direct strike, like the Wall Street Journal seems to suggest, a direct strike on Fordo using B-2 bombers dropping these massive ordnance penetrators to get at this hardened facility, which is literally built into a mountain, or to, at the very least, transfer the massive ordnance penetrator to Israeli stock so the Israelis can do it. I think there are other options though. For example, you know, I could be proven wrong. I could be proven wrong by the end of your show, but my sense is that the president's strategy is still escalate to de-escalate. So he is, you know, moving assets into theater. He has made the decision, but he's not yet pulled the trigger. I think that is a sign of intent. On his part, you know, to tell the Iranians that he's serious. I think if the Iranians, advisedly, are very bad at reading the Trump administration's messaging. They don't speak in the way that the Trump administration
speaks. Trump? Who does?
They don't speak. No. But listen, when the president says complete surrender, you can say never or you can say no, but we can offer XYZ, right? There's very different conversations. Yeah. And I think all that Trump is looking for is that second conversation. The Iranians are, because of national pride, because of, you know, perhaps incorrect political assessments, because the hallmark of authoritarian regimes is you never get promoted by telling the boss things he doesn't want to hear. And so the supreme leader may think he's in a better and a more favorable position than he actually is. You know, who knows? But the reality is that I think the Iranian regime is playing this incorrectly. And the longer it plays it incorrectly, the higher the likelihood that America will do this itself. I still think, though, right, on balance, that the Trump administration's preferred strategy is to get the Iranians chastened, bruised, bloodied, to come back to the table and really make meaningful concessions. That way, the president has a political win. He could say he ended the conflict. He has something on paper that's robust, far better than the 2015 nuclear deal, that he can take to Congress and sell. So I think that's still the preference. But that may change over time.
Folks, we are talking with Elon Berman of the American Foreign Policy Council about the evolving situation, literally minute by minute, as our discussion is continuing. You can find Elon's work as well as all of the great work of the AFPC at AFPC.org. We got to take care of a little bit of business. When we come back, what I want to ask Mr. Berman is this. When the Ayatollah says any U.S. military intervention will be accompanied by irreparable damage, what might that mean? Or is Iran so weakened and so isolated that that is basically all bark and no bite? It matters for each and every one of us, especially those families that have children serving in our military. Stay with us. This is the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
Welcome back. Welcome if you're just joining us. My name's Maggie Dawn. This is the Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. We're talking about the evolving situation in Iran with Mr. Ilan Berman of the American Foreign Policy Council. He is an expert on the Mideast. He's written numerous books on the matter, as well as editing many books on the Mideast, as well as other foreign policy areas of interest to the United States. He's a member of the Associated Faculty at Missouri State University's Department of Defense and Strategic Studies, as well as an adjunct professor at the Institute of World Politics. As an aside, I also noted in your bio that you are a member of the board of directors of Radio Free Europe and Radio Liberty. That is a topic for a whole nother day.
Fund
the voice of America, damn it. But let's return to the situation in Iran. Tehran is a city of 10 million people, and Iran stands at this historical moment, especially after the onslaught of the Israeli attacks over this past weekend and into this week, fairly weakened by some accounts, fairly isolated. Bashar al-Assad no longer in control in Syria. He was a big supporter of Iran. The Houthis have their impact and influence has been greatly diminished. Of course, Israel, the prolonged campaign in Gaza. And of course, Russia, perhaps Iran's biggest brother friend, is not going to directly get involved here, at least by most expert analyses that I've read. That actually scares me more, Mr. Berman, because the isolated adversary, the dog pushed into a corner by itself, if Donald Trump does okay the use of particularly this extraordinary, this underground penetrating massive ordnance to try to get rid of Iran's nuclear program in its entirety. I mean, if you're going to do this, then you want to ensure that Iran does not even come close to having this sort of capability for generations to come. That is the only reason to do that. And everyone, me included, sitting here today, we do not want a nuclear Iran. We know that the world is safer without that. What might Iran's response be? Are they even capable of a meaningful response? Can you just walk this out for us, if you will?
Yeah. No. So I think that's right. Although I would make the case that the formula is a little bit different. The formula that I think we're looking at is that the Iranian regime has to choose between their nuclear program and regime survival, right? I think that's what they have to choose. And all of the indicators that I'm seeing from the press and from folks I'm talking to here and in Israel is that neither the Israeli government nor the American government really has any interest in regime change. We here in the United States have, a very troubled, checkered history with regime change. We're not particularly good at it. We have in the recent memory, we have the experience of Iraq. And so I think the center of gravity in that debate is, we can create an opening, but the Iranians have to do it themselves, right? And if they do it themselves, that's where I think the zone of danger comes in, where a regime without allies, as you pointed out, that's backed into a corner that feels like it's going to fall from power, that's when unpredictability happens. That's when it could lash out. But I think that the plan of the White House is never to get to that stage. That's why I think what the administration is trying to do is trying to create that formula, basically telling the Iranian regime that They won't do anything to destabilize it if they come to the table. If they give up their nuclear program, they can still survive. Now, from, you know, as someone who has supported, you know, democracy in Iran for literally decades, I think that's a suboptimal outcome.
Yes.
But I do think it's an outcome that is very much consistent with the way the president thinks about foreign policy. He has staked a claim, battling back neo-isolationist elements of the Republican Party. He's staked a claim and said, you know, we have a core national interest in making sure Iran doesn't get a nuclear program. But he's not a regime changer. He has no interest in regime change. And so if there is a meaningful concession on the part of the Iranians, I think we never get to that zone of danger. That doesn't mean we don't get there by other means, because the Iranians could play this wrong. The Iranian people could rise up. You could sort of see all sorts of unintended consequences. If it happens, there's a few things that we need to watch for. First of all, if you notice, the Israeli military campaign against Iran hasn't really budged global markets very much. There's some up and down in terms of the Dow, but generally speaking, global markets are not changing. And the reason for that is that the energy supply, the energy is the lifeblood of the Iranian economy. Iran exports a tremendous amount of oil and natural gas. That hasn't really been impacted at all. It's been impacted by sanctions, but the Israelis have shown that they can target these facilities, but they haven't really done so yet. The reason that's important is because if Iran remains intransigent, they can become a target, and that would create, you know, sort of, you know, really staggering economic effects globally. And the Iranians also get a vote. So if they see trouble coming, they could do things like, for example, lay mines in the Strait of Hormuz, where there's a tremendous amount of container traffic and oil traffic, not in a way to shut the strait. If the strait is shut, the U.S. military will keep it shut, and it will be the cause that we need for us to go into Iran directly. But if it's narrowed, the price of oil goes up, and the entire market starts screaming, the entire global market.
The exact geography of the spigot being turned down would have ricochet impacts on top of some of the global economic chaos that we're facing. The Fed interest rate announcement just came up. Their inflation predictions have been announced. We're going to address that next. My big thanks to Mr. Elon Berman of the American Foreign Policy Council. Find more of his work at afpc.org. As this evolves, I hope you'll come back and join us again to help us all be a little bit smarter. Thank you. We have another expert return guest joining me next to discuss the Fed rate announcements. Don't go anywhere. This is the Civic Media Radio Network.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.